Big show for you here today. It's the post week 9 People's Panic Meter. But before we get to that, we got a Monday Night Football recap to get through. Thrilling overtime win for the Kansas City Chiefs over the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. A lot of big picture takeaways. DeAndre Hopkins goes off. Little questions on the other side. A lot of things to get into from that game. And then we dive into the People's Panic Meter. Who's in the coping corner? Is it time to add Jaylen Waddle? Is it time to freak out about some rookie wide receivers? And hey, even Amon-Ra St. Brown, is he somebody you should be panicking about? All of that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. It's Tuesday, November 5th. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast presented by Spectrum. And it is one hell of a day to talk ball. You know what we do here on the Tuesday shows. We dive into the People's Panic Meter. We talk coping corner. Don Del Don joins us. It's a hell of a time every single episode. But before we get into all that, I always recap Monday Night Football off the top here. And we've got a banger of a game to get into here. Chiefs 30, Bucks 24, overtime win by the Kansas City Chiefs. And like I said, really fun game. Enjoyable back and forth. A lot of takeaways to get into here. Let's actually start Bucks side here, because I think that's a tidier thing to wrap up here. First of all, any sort of, you know, revival of the Buccaneers run game, which has been a talking point. I know I've brought it up on the show before. They were actually talking about it on the broadcast at one point during this game. That was over. That did not happen in this contest. Bucky Irving leads the team with 7 carries, 3.4 yards per carry. Shoot, their most effective rusher was Sterling Shepard on 2 little jet sweep plays there. 10.5 yards per carry for my guy Sterling Shepard. Again, not good when he is your most effective rusher on a per carry basis. Again, it's 2 carries. I'm being a little facetious when I say that. But the impact for Sterling Shepard did not end there. Shepard was also the leading wide receiver with 48 yards. I'll reference this Sam Schwartzstein tweet here, because he sent this to me and Nate during the game. Nate and I during the game. Sam, of course, is part of the TNF Prime Vision broadcast, a total ball knower as well. As pointed out by Nate Tice and Matt Harmon, the break in case of emergency route for Baker is the out route to Sterling Shepard. 5 of 5, 43 yards, 34% catch rate over expected, third highest of players with at least 5 targets. And man, they peppered that route over and over again. I know Nate and I talked about it a couple episodes ago, but it's been fantastic that we can discuss Sterling Shepard and it's not ironic or like a little cutesy joke thing from two guys that liked Sterling Shepard as a prospect 100 years ago. The guy actually is their best wide receiver. And especially when, you know, look, Jalen McMillan hasn't been a good player this year, but he didn't even play in this game. So Shepard, it's where they're at from an offense perspective. Kate Otten, though, continues to lead the way in the passing game. 11 targets, 77 yards, 8 catches, and a touchdown here. He looks like a screaming right answer at tight end for fantasy. But, you know, it's tough for the Bucs offense. This is a difficult defense to go against, one that can put you in binds. I overall come away pretty impressed with the way Baker played for the most part. And especially, I thought it was another really good design, really good coaching job by Liam Cohen in this one. Liam Cohen's going to be a head coach somewhere next year, or at the very least he's going to get interviews, because this is a Bucs offense that doesn't have its superstar players in Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. They're down to, like I said, Sterling Shepard is their best wide receiver, and we're legitimately designing power slot looks for Kate Otten, which, by the way, that might be a thing. Put a pin in that just for a second. Finish the thing on Liam Cohen here. And this offense is still good. Like, all that being said, all this chaos here, they don't run the ball well in this game. This offense is still good. They hang with the undefeated Kansas City Chiefs in their own building. Remain really impressed with what Liam Cohen is doing. And, you know, I want to try to find – it's tough right now because we're just so deep down the depth chart. This is the type of offense I would want to try to find ways to invest in here. I don't know that there's any natural way in the passing game to do it right now with all these injuries. Shepard is the only reliable guy. And they're just so banged up over there, other than Kate Otten. Last point I just want to make on the Bucs here. I was actually talking with producer Colin about this during the game. Cade Otton, you actually watch him play. He is doing a lot of the same things from a deployment perspective, like the routes that he's running, how he's being used from a down-to-down basis as a pass catcher. He has really been the one to replace Chris Godwin as the power slot option here. And that just makes a lot of sense. I don't give a damn how many times Jalen McMillan lined up in the slot in college. Like, anyone who thought that Jalen McMillan was going to ever do anything that Chris Godwin did is not to be taken seriously. I mean, the guy never, even when he was a slot receiver in college, never did the true, like, big slot receiver stuff that Chris Godwin is doing. And I'm not saying that that's exactly what Cade Otton is replicating here. He's certainly not an after-catch option like Chris Godwin is. But he can run those routes over the middle of the field. He can win in tight coverage situations. He can block. He can, again, run those quick-hitting routes over the middle. He fits so much more in those type of plays, and he can be an asset in the run game as a blocker. Obviously, he's a damn tight end. So Otton has been the guy to take on those critical plays in this offense as opposed to any of these wide receivers, and I really don't see that letting up. Obviously, at one point, Evans is going to get back here. He's going to contribute to lifting the ceiling of this offense, and the Bucs are going to need that at some point because they've now fallen to 4-5. They need to start making up ground here pretty quickly. I don't know how they're going to be able to do that without Mike Evans. He has to get back into the fold very, very quickly here, and we'll see. We'll see if that can happen. But in the meantime, Cade Otton is the replacement for Chris Godwin. There's really no question about it. The Bucs have the 49ers in week 10, and then they go on a bye. So maybe we see Evans in week 10, but I think it's more likely we see him on the other side of the bye week. Let's talk Chiefs here, the team that won the game. Couple of notes. I mean, number one, DeAndre Hopkins, cool as hell in the Kansas City Chiefs uniform in this offense. His touchdown catch was exactly how I expected him to be used as an outside X receiver for this team. He's not going to win in the vertical ways. We know that at this point. However, he can be the ISO wide receiver and just went on a quick slant. And that was his second touchdown of the game, obviously. His other one before that was more of just a classic in-breaking route. He definitely got a playing time bump. The full route data is not in yet, but he, at least the ones I'm looking at right now, he was over 55% route participation. He was right up there with Xavier Worthy for the second wide receiver in playing time on the team. The targets were obviously there. 9 targets, 8 catches, 86 yards, and 2 touchdowns. He's being used in multiple alignments. Again, don't have the full data on this right now, but just in some of the early snap, that obviously watching the damn game, but some of the early snap data here too shows that he was not just used as a pure outside receiver, which he was in his first game against the Raiders last week, first game as a member of the Kansas City Chiefs. He was just pure outside receiver stuff. They actually did get him some slot reps here, downfield slot reps as well, some routes that are more vertically inclined from the interior. That was great to see because that's another way he can impact this team, because he's a much better zone beater than a man beater right now. However, he can still sting you, like I said, on that second touchdown. Look, it wasn't great coverage. It wasn't that impressive of a move or anything, but lining up as the ISO receiver, quick man coverage play. Mahomes pins it on him for the touchdown. If they were on the same page on that fourth quarter drive late in the fourth quarter, we might have been talking about another play like that as well. So really impressed with Hopkins. He looks like a guy you're starting, you know, as kind of a wide receiver 3. I'm not sure he's going to do this every single week, but he looks fantastic, looks dialed in, looks like he's loving being a member of the Chiefs. Don't blame him. Overall, this Chiefs offense was just mind-numbingly efficient. Again, they just never beat themselves. They don't have stupid penalties. They took some big sacks in this one. They lost a play on a Xavier Worthy rush attempt. But, man, they rarely ever go backwards. They almost always are going forwards, even with Kareem Hunt in the run game. Obviously, Kareem Hunt, another big game here, 27 carries, 3.9 yards per carry. We know that's going to be a part of it. And the game-winning touchdown. Just they consistently never get really rarely get big plays in this one. Long run of 15 yards for Kareem Hunt. But they just are always going forward. You know, 3 yards, 4 yards, 3 yards, 4 yards, just churning that thing out to an average of around 3.9 yards per carry. So, yeah, I mean, Hunt, I will admit that I don't have a lot of Kareem Hunt teams. So whenever I see Kareem Hunt, all I see is what Isaiah Pacheco could be doing behind this offensive line and in this rushing ecosystem right now. And we might get Pacheco back here somewhat soon. He would be obviously a huge winner in that scenario. Just again, to speak to the mind-numbing efficiency of this team, Patrick Mahomes on third down in this game. All of the Chiefs, four touchdowns, three through the air, one on the ground, came on third down. Patrick Mahomes on third down, 11 completions on 13 attempts, 9.7 yards per attempt, three touchdowns, and a 146 passer rating. You know, we obviously talk a coping corner with Dalton later in the show. Mahomes is in the coping corner. Couple more performances like this with Hopkins actually giving them real deal wide receiver play. We might have to have a conversation about Mahomes coming out of the coping corner. This tweet from Yahoo Fantasy kind of points to this maybe a slight change here. Patrick Mahomes, 24.5 for fantasy points against the Bucks, are his most since week 7 of 2023, which was over a year ago. And look, obviously it's the Bucks. The Bucks are an atrocious pass defense. You want to break a record, you're going to do it against Tampa Bay. You want to beat your previous season high, whatever, you're going to do it against Tampa Bay. That is where they're at right now. That being said, Hopkins, if he can continue to play like this and continue to earn Mahomes' trust, that point here, we haven't seen Mahomes put up this many fantasy points in over a year because he's not had a receiver like this. And I can't even remember. Like, it truly, we've not seen a ball winning X receiver also be able to move into the slot. We've not, like, Juju had his moments obviously before the injury. Rashee Rice, a great player. He doesn't do that stuff. He does not bring this dimension to this offense. And certainly none of the other guys that they've cycled in that receiver room have done this at any point. So Hopkins, if he continues to play like this, and I do think it's an if just because of where he is in his career at this point. However, the player he was on film earlier this year in Tennessee, certainly the player he was last year on film, adding that guy to the offense here, much less if he continues to get healthier from where he was at earlier this year and is more dialed in Kansas City than maybe he was in Tennessee, you add that player to the mix here, we are talking about something different that we just haven't seen with this Chiefs offense. So my mind is going to be open to that going forward with Kansas City. Elsewhere in Kansas City's offense, Travis Kelce, 14 catches on 16 targets. You know, that's obviously what we expect from him at this point, just kind of consistently moving the chains. And last thing, you know, shout out to every now and again, you guys will do something, the listeners will do something where I'm like, wow, people are really paying attention to this nonsense that we're putting out, which warms my heart and it makes me feel good about things. So I appreciate that. John Pounds. At 11:29 p.m. Eastern. I don't know where you live, John, but you know, I'm just saying Eastern because I'm on Eastern time here. John Pounds at 11:29 p.m. Eastern, after that game, sends in this panic meter tweet, which I'm glad I get to read off here on the show. I'm panicking about Xavier Worthy. Hopkins comes in and steals the show with a couple weeks of showing up to Kansas City. I drafted Worthy hoping for a late draft steal, but other than a dominant week one, he's been pretty much a flop. Is this drop territory after a minus rushing yard fiasco? Again, this comes in from John P. Yeah, Worthy, two carries, minus 10 yards. Worthy, no catches. I think this is where we're at with Xavier Worthy. Like, he would be a coping corner. You can go ahead and retroactively put him in the coping corner. I will make the executive decision to do that right now, without consulting Dalton, although I don't know if Dalton's going to disagree with me on this one, because this was the spot for Xavier Worthy to do it. Cause Xavier Worthy, and I hate to say this stuff, I don't want to be mean, but he can really only do one thing right now consistently effectively. He can rip big post routes against zone coverage. The Bucks play more zone coverage than anybody else in the league, and they're not very good at doing it. So if Xavier Worthy's not going to do his one thing that he can do right now at a really high level, he's not going to do it against this team. When's he going to do it? Left to play on the field, obviously, with the sideline mishap to start the game. I don't really know. Like, it is what it is, totally, with Xavier Worthy right now. He's just not ready. And I don't know if he ever will be ready, but nothing about the player he was on film in college indicated he would be a high-volume wide receiver in the NFL, certainly not this early. And he hasn't been. Nothing about the player he's been on film in the NFL indicates he's ready to be a high-volume wide receiver. So if you start him in fantasy, you're hoping for that one big play. This was the week for him to get that one big play. It was all laid out there. Didn't happen. That's obviously got to make you pretty concerned. He's just not going to be a high-volume player because when he gets that high volume, the results have not been great. So I was not willing to chase those targets heading into this week. I don't think you should be willing to chase those targets at any point. Except now with Hopkins here adding a new dimension and Kelce still doing his thing, I don't know that we're going to get those Xavier Worthy targets going forward. All right. Longer Monday night recap than we usually get, but this one was pretty action-packed. Great game, went to overtime. A lot of big takeaways come out of this one, so hopefully you guys enjoyed it. But with that, Let's throw it to Dalton. The rest of the show, the People's Panic Meter, Coping Corner, all of that. Let's get into it. Joining us now, as he always does here on Tuesday, is my good friend Dalton Del Don. Dalton, what's going on, buddy?
Not much, Harmon. Just trying to get through this football season. Good times. Kind of a crazy week. How you doing, man?
Definitely a crazy week. Man, lot to unpack. I feel like on this show, a lot to unpack about the NFL generally. So many injuries, so many changes. We've got our second head coach firing. The Saints fired Dennis Allen. The Raiders have cleared, a bunch of guys off of their offensive coaching staff. Not sure what they thought they were going to get on offense this season, but whatever it was they were hoping for, they haven't gotten it. So I'll be honest, I'm feeling pretty feisty today as we head into the People's Panic Meter, which is a good thing, Dalton. But yeah, I mean, again, any reaction just off the top to Dennis Allen or the Raiders firing or all their coaches? Or I mean, man, again, things are changing at a rapid pace here.
No, not. I'm just happy to hear that you're feisty today, most of all. But yeah, Dennis Allen, that his quarterback was Derek Carr both times he's been fired, is kind of funny. But wow, think back New Orleans after the first 2 weeks and we were going crazy about the motion and the play action.
Yikes.
Mean, what in the world happened there? Yeah, the Raiders. I mean, you know, it's one of those coaches that had the locker room together, but you knew that the X's and O's may not work the next season. And it's kind of turned into that disaster for Las Vegas.
Yeah, shout out to Jason, who is our chief designer. I don't know if that's actually Jason's title, but that's the title I'm going to give him on the show going forward. Chief designer here on the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast. He pointed out before the show started that Derek Carr is the only quarterback who's gotten his head coach fired in season twice. The same guy. So that is pretty beautiful.
Only quarterback to lose to 31 teams, and he has a chance to lose to the 32nd later this year.
Who's the 32nd?
The Raiders, I think. I think.
Terrific.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Only quarterback to 31, and he has a chance to do the circle of all 32. Yeah, let's do it.
Let's do it. I mean, let's freaking do it. I would love to see that. Okay. All right. I mean, that is a perfect transition before we get into the meat of the show, where we go through the post week 9 People's Panic Meter, all of your submissions. We do start the show, as we always do here, with a check-in on the Coping Corner. Last week for Halloween, we did zombie Coping Corner candidates. We went one by one through everybody in the Coping Corner and decided whether we were going to take any of the players out. We're not going to do that this week, although I will allow Dalton to take a player out if he wants to. State of the Coping Corner right now. If you are new to the show, the Coping Corner is simply, we're past panic. It's not that these players are banged. You can never play them in fantasy football again. Any of that stuff. It's just, we're not panicking about the status of this player because they're kind of stuck where they are. It is what it is, basically, is what the Coping Corner is. The players that are in the Coping Corner right now, heading into week 10, Tank Dell, Keenan Allen, Calvin Ridley, Patrick Mahomes, Sam Laporta, Javonte Williams, CJ Stroud, and Anthony Richardson. I'll just note on CJ Stroud, we got an email from Duru, who has a PhD. So you're a smart guy. I'm not going to fight you on this. But remember, if a player is in the Coping Corner, again, we don't panic about that player anymore. So we're not going to sit here and analyze whether you should panic about CJ Stroud because he's in the Coping Corner. It is what it is. With all that being said, Dalton, all those names I threw out there, anybody that we should consider removing from the Coping Corner heading into week 10?
Well, Tank Dell did see 9 targets. He actually produced with them. Stephon Diggs is out for the season. Who knows Nico Collins? So, I mean, I could certainly see an argument for Tank Dell. And Calvin Ridley in 2 games without DeAndre Hopkins, 39.4% and 29.6% target shares. Just because things have fundamentally changed with injuries, I could be talked into either of those two.
Yeah, I think I'm good taking Tank Dell out. I think we could take Tank Dell out because I also thought he looked good on some like Tank Dell routes in
a tougher matchup too. Yeah, that was a tougher secondary. I think Sauce may have got banged up early, but still, whatever. Yes, he looked better.
Yes, he actually looked better, and to me, that was the key. It's not about the opportunities, things like that. It's about how does he look. Now, I don't love the way that the entire Texans offense looks right now, and it's got to be one hell of a whiplash to go from Nico Collins is my wide receiver 1, Stephon Diggs is my wide receiver 2, to the separation that those guys give you to what CJ Stroud was dealing with on Thursday night. So Stroud definitely remains in the Coping Corner, but I think we can go ahead and take Tank Dell out because at this point, and this is right around the time of the year I always mention this, that Tony Pollard told me this is when he started to feel better, kind of coming off a not completely similar injury, but a somewhat similar injury. So he said, Tony Pollard said week 11, we're heading into week 10 here. So Tank Dell should be getting back to about what we would expect. Tank Dell obviously banged up that knee or the leg injury before Tony Pollard, who did it in the playoffs against your Niners that year. So I think we're right around the time zone when we can start to feel better about Tank Dell. So if you want to panic about Tank Dell, if he catches 4 for 50 yards or something like that next week, with Nico out there or not out there, we'll discuss it going forward, because Tank Dell officially removed from the coping corner. But anything else to react from coping corner wise, or are we set here?
Yeah, obviously, you give me a little leeway here. I'm going to talk about my guy Anthony Richardson after this Sunday night game, Harmon. I mean, how can I not? I was actually high on Joe Flacco. I know people are talk about the Brian Flores defense, but you look back at his history, it's often he gets off to these hot starts and then they fade throughout the season. They're 21st in EPA per pass over the last four games entering Sunday night. It allowed 12 touchdowns over four games. And then Flacco produced the worst EPA per play number for the Colts since week one of last season. They didn't reach the red zone once. 227 yards of offense, their lowest of the year. Their prior low was Joe Flacco's last start. But the completion percentage was higher, Harmon. You know, the early down success rate, this chart was put out before Flacco sucked, because I heard, you know, among others, Andy talk about how the stats aren't even close, you know, Richardson versus Flacco. It's just depends on what stats you use. Yards per play, Richardson was 6.1 versus 4.9 Flacco on early downs before this last game. You look at the success rate, the rushes, EPA, it was Richardson was positive and Flacco was -8. But this is, again, before he faced a team that had been getting beat up. The Flacco was running hot on third downs against Jacksonville. I guess there's preparation issues. Maybe this is a Chris Ballard versus Shane Steichen thing. I'll end it with just benching your 22-year-old quarterback after his receivers dropped four touchdowns to move Sunday night's point spread 1 point might have been misguided. I'm still stashing AR.
Oh, I like it. I like that you finished with that there. I'm with you that I obviously thought that the pass catchers might get a bump here with Flacco, but
so did I.
I think we all did. Even people that were against the move of benching Anthony Richardson, and like I could kind of see it. I could kind of see a little bit both sides here, and I want to always remember that there's a lot that goes on in the building that I don't really know with the whole Anthony Richardson thing. That said, like Flacco did not make the offense better. And in fact, he made it worse in several ways. I talked about this on yesterday's podcast, where the run game, this is a thing now. When Richardson's not on the field, Jonathan Taylor's production falls off a cliff, and so does everybody else from a running perspective in that offense. And that just makes sense, man, because Richardson gives you another body to think about. You're playing 11-on-11 football from a defensive perspective. You're not doing that when Joe Flacco's back there. Especially when they have injuries on the offensive line, Flacco's a sitting duck in the pocket. Richardson, for the most part, obviously the last game that we saw him against the Texans notwithstanding, but for the most part, his superpower has been sack avoidance. So I think there's a lot of concern right now with anybody attack. Like, we put Richardson in the coping corner. A couple more games like this from Flacco and them just signed, you know, because they said he's going to start the rest of the season, I think. Like, again, I will believe that when I see it. If we keep getting games like this from Flacco, and, you know, Richardson's not going to be considered, We're going to be putting some more Colts players in the coping corner. Jonathan Taylor maybe included. And even Josh Downs, because for whatever reason, Dalton, they decided to play a bunch of 12 personnel. I don't, maybe that's what Flacco wanted to do. I have no idea. But Downs was taken off the field a ton. And then you've got, you know, a banged up Michael Pittman, who's not clearly not close to 100%. And Alec Pierce out there running all the routes. I mean, it's not good in Indianapolis right now.
Yeah, mainly just wanted to point out, I get it, he's been a fantasy bust, but stats-wise in real life, the completion percentage is ugly, but he was actually, you know, the Colts were a better offense with him on the field against tougher competition before Flacco even bombed on Sunday night. And, you know, he's good at avoiding sacks. On that play, he tapped out. It was the best half-yard run of the season. I mean, he avoided all kinds of pressure back. A couple of chef's kisses, then we'll move on. Flacco fumbling a botched handoff was terrific, because that's what Richardson kept struggling with this year. But the even better chef's kiss might have been Richardson yawning when they cut to him on the sideline talking about him tapping out. Just perfect timing for my guy to look not great in primetime.
Yeah, the yawn was fantastic. I mean, hey, he's sleepy. Maybe
he's still tired. Yeah,
he's still tired. Him and Jermaine Burton need to get their sleep schedule down. They need an aura ring. Okay, they need to get their need to get their sleep schedule down. Both those guys.
I'm a Whoop guy, but yeah, either one.
I'm an aura guy. So yeah. We should. By the way, let's cut that out of the podcast. We don't need to give free sponsorship ways of these things. Give me a break. You want us to show the products on the pod? Pay us money. All right. With that being said, let's get into the post week 9 people's panic meter.
Would you say it's time for everyone to panic?
Yes, I would, Kent.
Oh my God! Okay, it's happening!
No! Wait!
Everybody stay calm!
What's the procedure?
Stay calm!
We went through the coping corner. That's great. The other kind of designations we can give players out here based on your submissions, both to the email fantasymailbag@yahoosports.com and on social media, is either no panic, some panic, total panic, or again, we throw you in the coping corner. And there will be some players thrown in the coping corner in this particular one. That is for sure. All right. First one here. Let's play this audio message from Alex P., who sends this in on Jalen Waddle.
What up, Matt? This is Alex. Wanted to drop you a question here if I should be freaking out about Jalen Waddle. Feels like he's been underperforming all year. And even with Tua back, he scores the short touchdown, but clearly wasn't part of the game plan. Should we be worried long term about Waddle? Is something off with him? Or should we expect to bounce back and a potential elite receiver into the future? Thanks.
All right, so that was Alex P. on Jalen Waddle. Barrett R. also sent in an email on Jalen Waddle. Jalen Waddle's final stat line was 2 catches on 2 targets for -4 yards and a touchdown. And that line somehow seems overly rosy versus how the experience of starting him actually felt during the game. He had his first target with less than 3 minutes left in the fourth quarter. Odell Beckham, Jonnu Smith, and Mostert were all getting more production in the passing game. We're all more productive in the passing game than Jalen Waddle. Is he droppable? What the hell is going on? Jalen Waddle's ADP was wide receiver 19. His current ranking is wide receiver 67. It has certainly not gotten better for Jalen Waddle with Tua back in the mix. Dalton, what's going on with Jalen Waddle and where do we stand?
Yeah, frustrating. I'm saying total panic for now. He's lucky he even caught that touch, and it looked like he was going to have to leave the game after hurting his ankle. He's seemingly always banged up. He gets hurt midweek practices constantly. Had a 23-yard loss on the game's final play. That's why his yardage total looks like that. But here's the key problem here is last year from Tua, he had a 22% target share. This year, it's 13.7%. Achans, meanwhile, has doubled, and his is 20.4%. He's Miami's wide receiver 2, full stop. Jonnu Smith has a higher target share from Tua, 19.4%. Tua's ADOT, average depth of target this last game, 5.2 yards, Harmon, 7th percentile. I believe I heard one pass attempt 20 yards downfield, and that's the one he underthrew to Tyreek Hill that should have been a touchdown. He turned a touchdown into a 27-yard play. We're really worried about Waddle, who still absolutely could have a spike week, but I'm going to rank him like outside my top, not as a starter right now, just given this volume. It's a problem. We all hoped that Tua returning was going to fix the whole offense. It certainly fixed Achan, bigger gains will be coming from Tyreek. He's been historically shut down by Buffalo, or at least for his, based on his typical performance. Waddle's a real panic right now.
Can I be honest with you, Dalton? I was ready to just put him in the coping corner.
Sure, I wouldn't fight. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, because look, here's the thing. You mentioned the Devon Achane role. You mentioned the Jonnu Smith role being ahead of Jalen Waddle. And here's where I get stuck. Those plays work. Those plays are good. Like the Devon Achane targets are fruitful for the Dolphins offense. Even the Jonnu Smith like schemed up stuff when there's all this space in the middle of the field or wherever he is, he's completely wide open with room to run after the catch. Like those work for the Dolphins offense. They've got problems. Don't get me wrong. They've got problems as a team, no question, but those are not the issues. Like the issue is not, oh man, we got to get Jalen Waddle more involved. Like Waddle will have moments. There's no question he's going to have big games. I don't know how you're going to pinpoint them. Like, this is the Jalen Waddle game, unless Tyreek Hill misses a contest or something like that, then sure, maybe that's going to be the moment that you start Jalen Waddle. But I have no idea how you're going to figure that out. I would kind of compare it, Dalton, to he's sort of like the Brandon Ayuk in this offense, where he's the X receiver because he's on the line of scrimmage. But the problem is he plays the quarterback who's a little less aggressive than your guy, Brock Purdy. Tua wants to get that ball out fast. That's kind of the whole point of the offense, is getting the ball out fast. He's getting it out even faster and shorter because Achane now is getting truly designed looks. So there's just going to be more volatility in that role anyways. I also think he's not quite as good as Brandon Ayuk at his peak, even though Waddle's a fantastic player. And because of that, like, there is a gap between, you know, Tyreek down to Waddle. So he's never gonna be the top target getter on the team anyways. And now he's fallen to third. That's just problematic. Like, you're not gonna have three guys eat every single week. And I think at this point, he looks like a distant third on this pecking order. I think at some point he'll pass up Jonnu Smith, whatever. But right now, distant third on an offense that's not firing on all cylinders. Like, I think he's coping corner to me, because there's no way, almost no chance at this point, based on how the season has gone, that he's going to return top 20 wide receiver value. Like, you're going to be lucky if he becomes kind of a boom bust wide receiver three at this point.
Yeah, someone drafted that high typically doesn't see this kind of usage, but here we are in 4-2 of starts. Tyreek Hill, 32 targets, Achane, 30. Waddle 17. So yeah, you're seeing four looks a game. It's not enough. I'm with you unless, you know, like a Hill injury or something, I'm good with putting him in the coping corner.
Yeah. All right. So Jalen Waddle goes in the coping corner. We do not address him going forward. Danielle sends in this email about Brian Thomas Jr. Hello. While eternally grateful the return thus far on the draft day investment, Brian Thomas Jr.'s week 9 production was a bit of a bummer. Wide receivers are obviously volatile, but only 4 targets, 13% target share on the day was a letdown. I would have thought his 4 great games over the trailing 5 weeks and the injuries to Kirk and Davis would lead to a more featured role, but it feels like the passing game still flows through Evan Engram. Do you expect that to change down the stretch? Thank you. I mean, as Daniel mentioned, it's been a great investment to draft Brian Thomas Jr. this year. Wide receiver 40 ADP, current ranking is wide receiver 9. Dalton, any concerns about BTJ coming out of week 9? I totally get it. It is disappointing when, you know, you're missing the top 2 wide receivers or top 2 other guys in the depth chart. And obviously, Brian Thomas Jr. gives you that performance in fantasy.
And down big, too. You know, the game script was just ripe for a ton of passes. But it's no panic for me, assuming he recovers fully from this injury. He was playing through a chest injury that had him questionable up till game time. I'm probably going to mess up his name, but Kenyon Mitchell, the DB on the Eagles, his last 4 games, 15 targets, 8 catches allowed, 73 yards, 0 yeah. TDs. And I believe he was on BTJ for a good portion of this game. Next 2 weeks at home against Minnesota at Detroit. I mean, BTJ is like a DFS option this week against the Vikings that I keep saying there. You know, there's, again, they had allowed 12 passing touchdowns the previous 4 games before Flacco couldn't reach the red zone. So I think BTJ is going to be totally fine, and I'm going to rank him super aggressively, assuming he's healthy this week.
Yeah, look, I mean, I do just want to point out that, you know, Brian Thomas Jr. is a great player, but he is still, since week 5, he's 48th in the NFL in target share at 18.1%. He's not, I, as much as I love Brian Thomas Jr., I do think some people have jumped the shark with where he is as a player a little bit. I think he's a great player. I think he's a, But he hasn't been performing at like true legit number one wide receiver type level. He's been a little bit more boom bust as an individual player. I always put him on that Martavis Bryant archetype, which is great, but it's not real deal legit number one wide receiver. I think he's probably going to get there. I mean, everything about him is upward trajectory, sky's the limit type deal. I'm not, again, not concerned about him as a player at all. I'm also, by the way, at no panic here. So I'm just saying all that to point out that we do have to keep, kind of in mind here what his role is on this team. And as, you know, Danielle mentions, yeah, right or wrong, I do think the passing game kind of flows through Evan Engram too much, and it is a very strict offensive system that I like how they've deployed Brian Thomas, but they're never just going to make him the featured player, if that makes sense. So no panic from a fantasy perspective, because a lot of it probably did have to do with the injury as well, but just want to note that about his role going forward.
Yeah, that target rate is concerning, but now Christian Kirk's out for the season. And one other positive here is Trevor Lawrence leads the NFL in end zone targets by a wide margin, 4 more than the next highest, Stafford, who has played 1 game fewer. But Lawrence throwing all those balls in the end zone, I guess that's why we see so many receivers almost coming down with them since last year, because he's doing that. And that's great for fantasy receivers. You want those targets in the end zone.
All right, let's move on to the next one here. Owen sends us in about Amon-Ra St. Brown. Hey, Matt and Dalton, less of an overall panic than worry about a potential teardrop, but Amon-Ra St. Brown's yardage has been a bit rough, leading to a sub 1,000-yard pace for the first time since his rookie year. His touchdown streak has been keeping him in the wide receiver one mix, but can he keep up that 13-touchdown pace? What's more likely, that higher passing yardage becomes more necessary for Detroit, or that Amon-Ra St. Brown starts forgetting to put on his touchdown deodorant every now and then, and the yardage BO starts to become more noticeable slash concerning? Love all the analogies here. Some Scott Pienowski terms thrown in there as well from Owen. Amon-Ra St. Brown, current ranking is wide receiver 11. His ADP was wide receiver 4. So any concern about St. Brown for you right now, Dalton, with a lot of the factors that were just thrown out here by Owen?
Some panic, just in the sense we need to lower expectations a little bit. I expect more of the same than what we've seen from him so far this season. Jared Goff is averaging 21 pass attempts over the last six games. I mean, hyper-efficient, the best completion percentage in NFL history if the season ended today. But, man, that volume is low. St. Brown's seventh in target share still, but 44th in air yards. The red zone targets will be nice. I think the touchdowns are going to remain, but yes, maybe drop him a tier based on his ADP.
Yeah. I mean, it's just like, if you look at his stats from 2023 to 2024, 2023 air yard share, 31.5%, 2024, 30.8%. Target share in 2023, 28.6%. Target share this year, 27.8%. The usage is not any different. He's not on the field any less than he was. Targets per route run, maybe, again, slightly down, but not a meaningful drop. The biggest difference, as Owen pointed out, is that his touchdown rate is at 10.2%, where it was at 4.2% as a rookie, 4.1% in 22, and 6.1% in 23. So there's definitely a one of these things doesn't look like the other. His explosive reception percentage is a little higher. You know, his EPA per target is a little bit higher. His success rate as a target is actually significantly higher. So St. Brown's been great. He's basically been used the same way from last year to this year. You just pointed it out that it's the lack of overall passing volume in Detroit because they haven't had to do anything. I mean, like that game against the Packers, his touchdown catch was sick. They converted a couple of like fourth down plays, and then they just basically leaned on Green Bay the entire rest of the game. And they're just so clean. They're such an overall efficient operation. I don't really see that changing. There's going to be games where they need to drop back a ton. It's just going to happen. It's just going to be variance. I don't know when those games are going to be. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know. If like, needing to drop him a tier, maybe. I always thought he was a tier two wide receiver anyways. He wasn't really a tier one guy to me. And so for me, I don't really know that I need to adjust expectations for him, but I guess it just depends. Like, I mean, rest of season rankings, how many other guys would you really rather have than St. Brown?
Yeah, same exact average depth of target as last season as well. Yeah, I think it just comes down to expectations. Some who drafted him aggressively, top five, thought he could be the number one PPR guy, or need to come back to more your reality, which where you had him before the year. But yes, he's still top 12-ish every week, and you're going to start him.
Yeah, I mean, I would say rest of season rankings wise, he's still, like I said, tier two, but like probably the top of tier two. I mean, I have him grouped around guys like Nico Collins, Puka Nacua, Drake London, Tyreek Hill, Malik Nabers. Like, any of those guys you definitively want over St. Brown? I'm not 100%. Maybe Nico Collins, obviously, no, depending on if he plays this week, I'd say, sure, yeah, Nico Collins Nico, for sure. Yeah. But maybe the other guys, not really.
No, I'm with you. That's totally the same tier. Wouldn't fight over any of them other than a healthy Nico.
Yeah, just looking at the Lions' schedule, week 10, they get the Texans. We'll see, again, if Nico plays, that's obviously going to change things. But Jags, Colts, Bears, Packers, Bills, Bears, 49ers through the rest of the fantasy season. So there's some games like Buffalo, maybe, Packers in week 14 if Jordan Love is healthier. That's a
Niners and the Niners fantasy championship could be high scoring.
Like, yeah, those could be big, big St. Brown games, and then we're not really having this conversation. So honestly, I would say, do you want to do some panic? I'm almost at no panic, honestly.
I'm good either way. No panic's fine, because especially where your original in expectations are just pretty much in line to what's happening.
Yeah, because again, like honestly, it's good that you've gotten through this stretch where the Lions are leaning on teams and he's still scoring these touchdowns. That's going to make the final result look better, because I would be shocked if we don't get some like 10 catch games mixed in here, even if it certainly will not be against like Jacksonville and Indy and Chicago, but some of these other teams, he definitely can get involved in like a big time shootout there. Last one here, Dylan P on Chris Olave. Hey guys, longtime viewer, first time sender, et cetera, et cetera. We all know Olave's got that dog in him, but is there any reason to panic about the absolute hospital balls Derek Carr keeps sending our boys way? It feels like we're starting to approach Tua levels of concussion back to back, and that's worrisome. Let me know your thoughts. Thank you, Dylan. Chris Olave, wide receiver 15, current rankings, wide receiver 55. I maintain this guy has had the most unlucky season I can remember from a fantasy perspective. But yeah, man, Dalton, full transparency, I almost didn't want to put this one on here because like, what are we supposed to say? Yeah, like I'm pretty panicked about Olave at this point. Like, and I wouldn't even be surprised if he gets put on IR and misses multiple weeks for a Saints team that we just mentioned at the top of the show, fired their head coach and is clearly going nowhere this year.
100%. This is a total panic. And what can you say? He suffered his fifth concussion in the NFL that we know of. I hope he takes some time off. I mean, yeah, this sucks in a lost season for New Orleans. Why would you rush back for that? How much do you put this at Carr in the hospital balls? I actually was curious about that. I mean, because you see routes, you're looking at film more than me. Like, so where do you place the responsibility on those?
Yeah, I mean, let's put it this way. Well, for one, I actually saw a video. I think it was Kat Terrell from who covers the Saints, and she asked Derek Carr about Michael Thomas's, you know, tweet spree on this that Andy and I talked about yesterday. Yeah. I almost felt bad for Derek Carr after that because he was clearly it clearly hurt him that like a former teammate, even he actually said, I've had a lot of teammates over my time in the NFL. Michael Thomas is the only guy that doesn't like me, which I thought was like an interesting thing to just admit, even though we didn't need him to tell us. It was very obvious that that's how Michael Thomas felt. I still was surprised he just came out and said that, but it's clearly bothered him that a former teammate like went on a long tweet spree about how he's so ass on my granny. You know, I mean, that's tough stuff. I felt bad for Carr in that regard, and watching the playback, like, and his explanation of it is like, hey, we got the coverage look, and like, that's what you wanted. I took that throw. I just think the throw was bad. Like, it's not necessarily like, hey, I'm trying to hang my receiver out to dry. I do think some guys are worse than that. I think that it was a bad ball. It put Olave in a bad position, no question about that. And you know, it's kind of, I think Brady's talked about this stuff, you know, with quarterbacks, and Carr's too good to be making that kind of pass. You know, he's too accomplished to be missing the throw in that way. But I don't think it was necessarily like obviously it wasn't on purpose or anything like that. So yeah, just bad ball, should have been better, and Olave is the guy who suffers for it.
Nightmare season for Olave, ready to really finally get going. A great matchup against Carolina, no Shahid, Carr back, and then in an early exit and a brutal one, then an ambulance, just horrible. And obviously, we just hope he's okay. But yeah, obviously, a lot of panic here.
Yeah, total panic for sure. Just sucks. It sucks that we're less than not even three full seasons into this guy's career and we're having this conversation, and he's such a great player. And there will be bozos out there that only view things from a fantasy points perspective that think this guy's like overrated or something like that. He's a fantastic wide receiver. And again, I think this year was probably going to be the year for him. And he mostly was just, there was just a lot of bad luck and things like that. So it is unfortunate. Again, I've had a chance to talk to Chris Olave. Seems like a great guy. You know, I hope for the best for him, for sure. And so we'll just see what happens with that situation. Let's take our first break. We'll come back. We'll reset. And we'll talk through our social media submissions to the People's Panic Meter right after this. All right, we're back. Let's run through our submissions from the people on social media. First one comes in from @the_crow_show on the Cowboys. I'm slamming the panic button on the Cowboys. Two losses out of their bye week, Dak with a hamstring injury, and CeeDee Lamb banged up with a shoulder and a knee. Run game is non-existent. Signed, a Dak/CD manager in Dynasty. Yeah, Cowboys are in trouble. Cowboys might not have Dak Prescott for multiple weeks. He's a candidate to potentially go on IR. CeeDee Lamb obviously dealing with an injury too. I mean, it's Dalton, it's over. It's over for the Dallas Cowboys. But anything else to add with Dallas here?
Oh, man, it is definitely over. Dak took 3 sacks against an Atlanta defense. It entered with an NFL low 6 on this season, like historically low to have that mount at this point of the year. He took him on back-to-back plays at one point. Prescott's 22-yard run in the second quarter was Dallas's longest run of the season. This offense just
serious?
Looks broken.
I didn't know that.
That's what the telecast said. Prescott has entered, Carmen, having already attempted 12 more tight window throws than his previous career high for an entire season before this last game. I mean, the offense just is broken, right? Yeah. I mean, there's what more can we say? John Owning had a good tweet of all just the they're running no crossers. It's just an uninventive offense that's a problem. And now Dak is out for multiple weeks. And Cooper Rush had a ghastly completion percentage of expectation, but apparently he's better than Trey Lance, my guy. This is just bad. Also, CeeDee Lamb is dealing with a shoulder injury in which he's labeled week to week. For what it's worth, this was supposedly a bad matchup for Lamb. If you're, you know, deep into DFS, whatever, Atlanta runs the two high or something, that was pointing to a bigger game from Ferguson, which happened. But whatever, man, it doesn't matter who the opponent is. If a team with a horrible pressure rate, I thought that was a really nice setup for Dak, and maybe he would have got there in fantasy in garbage time in the fourth quarter. But this offense is just, it's not going to flip over here. This looks like a real issue for a team that had been among the league leaders in points per game over the last 4 years. I think they're like 20th this year, and it's only going to get worse with these injuries. I mean, obviously the losses on offensive line are a problem here. Zach Martin looks, maybe done.
Yeah, looking questionable right now for sure. Just wanted to note that, you know, Cooper Rush is going to start for Dak here, and he had that run in 2022 where he went 4-1. And you know, a lot of irresponsible tweets from Cowboys fans about Cooper Rush, maybe people that I personally know. But you know, you look back at that Cowboys offense, don't look like that anymore. Don't look like 2022 Cowboys not walking through that door. Tony Pollard was a 1,000-yard rusher that year. Zeke Elliott scored 12 touchdowns. They had CeeDee Lamb. They had Dalton Schultz. They had Michael Gallup. You know, like that. This is not that team, right? You know, this is even Michael Gallup not 100%. Like, this is not that group that's walking through that door. This is a much, much worse offense here this year from a personnel standpoint, from an offensive line standpoint. It's much worse. I think CeeDee Lamb is probably going to play through this injury. I think he'll be fine with Cooper Rush, but I still this is how over it is for the Dallas Cowboys offense. Producer Colin, who's a Cowboys fan, told me a week ago that there was serious conversation on Cowboys Twitter, like real deal debates and true discourse on Cowboys Twitter about maybe it's time to give, like, in order to give the offense a spark, let's play your guy, Trey Lance, in a Taysom Hill type of role. That is the signal for it's never been more over than when it's like, wow, the offense needs a spark. Maybe we can turn Trey Lance into the next Taysom Hill. Yeah, it's beyond over when that is a real thought. And as Colin told us today, that drumbeat is only getting louder, which means that you're only getting pushed harder and deeper into the coping corner, because I think that's where the 2024 Dallas Cowboys offense belongs at this point.
Yeah, Cooper Rush CPOE was in the 6th percentile Sunday night, and yet he's out playing Trey Lance in practices, apparently. I mean, Lance's last outing we saw in the exhibition games weren't pretty. A hurt Dak for multiple weeks. Sounds like this hamstring's a problem, not to mention the cut hand. Zeke is getting suspended or inactivated. It's a problem there. One thing I will say is Rico Daddles played a little better than I give him credit for. Like, you look at the success rate and stuff, he's actually been okay. He did make an easy touchdown catch into a juggling one, but he might actually be okay fantasy-wise if they just, you know, release Zeke and they just give him all the touches. He's played a little better than I expected, but this offense is just a total disaster.
Yeah, they're still trying to make Dalvin Cook happen. I don't know what practices he's tearing it up in, but he does not look great in the games. He doesn't even look like he knows the playbook. There was one like where he thought he was the running back and he went rocked out there. Total mess in Dallas. I think we put the Dallas Cowboys offense in the coping corner. Maybe we have to readdress that at some point, but I don't think we're gonna change that.
It's too bad too. Coming out of the bye, all those targets. I know some came in garbage time, but you know, CeeDee Lamb, like he could range of outcomes is definitely the number one fantasy receiver over the rest of the season. And right now, I don't think that's the case.
All right, next one here comes in from K McDuder on Malik Nabers. Not really panicking, but Nabers has quickly gone from one of my favorite rookie draft picks ever to will this guy get 10 targets? Because that's all I can ask for at this point. Did not think I would be in PPR scam mode with this elite talent by week 10. The offense is just rudderless. And yeah, this is where definitely we have arrived with Malik Nabers. Josh Norris pointed this out. I was talking about on Twitter today that Malik Nabers, since the Giants lost Andrew Thomas, who's their all-world left tackle, 4 catches for 41 yards on 8 targets, 7 catches for 71 yards on 13 targets, and 9 catches for 59 yards on 11 targets. Pretty pathetic stuff there. And look, like, Malik Nabers is great, but every wide receiver can be thwarted by a terrible environment, and that is what's happening here with Malik Nabers over the last 3 weeks. So where are we at with Nabers, whose ADP was wide receiver 23, current ranking is wide receiver 14?
I'll label it some panic. Couple things going on here. Yes, he's been extra sensitive to pressure rate, like his target rate drops when Jones has been pressured significantly this season. But these last couple off games, returning from a concussion does not mean you're 100%. It often takes players multiple weeks to get back to their true self. So that's one thing going on here. Another is he had 0 catches on 1 target at halftime Sunday. I mean, what's happening here? Daniel Jones had -8 net passing yards. But he did see 10 targets afterward, even if it was a PPR scam. At least it was there. And now moving forward, home matchup against Carolina, then the bye, the home matchup against Tampa Bay, at Dallas, New Orleans, yeah, Baltimore, at Atlanta, Indy. I mean, this is like pretty awesome favorable schedule for fantasy wideouts, but passes might be coming from Drew Lock. That's mm-hmm. definitely a concern here, because Jones, for no other reason, I mean, he's a major risk to just get benched to prevent, you know, injury risk for his contract next year. So some panic for me, but Nabers is still awesome. And I think he's going to be a top 10 fantasy wide receiver still down the stretch, even with this quarterback situation. And if I'm wrong on that, then he's going to be top 15, whatever. You look at his target rate, man. I mean, it's look at his targets, the volume's there.
Yeah, I think it's only some panic, but some level of panic here, just to kind of readjust expectations a little bit here, that he's not quite on that like Justin Jefferson tier or anything like that. He's maybe a little bit below that, but that's fine. Like, he's still going to be a huge value. You're still going to start him every single week. And yeah, if he can have an atrocious game from a results perspective and still scam his way to 9 catches, like, that's actually probably a good thing. And it's just that's how he's used in this offense.
And would rather see him be scammed than Wandell Robinson,
oh,
right?
For sure.
Because they have phased him out a little bit more, and that's would rather him be getting these PPR scamming points. And I wrote this in my column, but good luck drafting Tyrone Tracy Jr. before me if we're in draft together next year. Get a quarterback there, man. Nabers and Tracy. I mean, how fun would that offense be? Offensive line, too. But, man, that's a pretty sick young wide receiver running back combo in New York.
Yeah, no doubt. They need to figure out the quarterback position, that's for sure. All right, next one. Oh my God, I really don't even want to talk about this one this week. At CJC_54, I'm beyond done with Marvin Harrison and Kyler Murray. He's not great yet in the pro game in terms of Harrison, but Kyler is nothing but a dump off king. I'm over it. Dude, I swear to God, I don't even want to talk about this one this week. Because, like, did you watch 1 second of this game? I'm saying this to anyone that's panicking about these players. Like, it is going to happen, bro. Number one, Kyler, throw that ball to Trey McBride when he's wide open in the end zone. I don't know what he was. I don't know why he didn't pull the trigger on that. That happens with Kyler every now and again. I totally get it. Kyler's still a top 10 fantasy quarterback who was never. I don't know what analyst out there told you he was going to be the QB1 overall. They lied to you. I don't know. But, like, he's been a starting fantasy quarterback. Harrison has definitely been up and down, and he was for sure overdrafted. I get that. But, like, all these rookie receivers have had down weeks. We just talked about Malik Nabers. We talked about Brian Thomas Jr. Like, that's going to happen with these guys. They're learning the pro game. I do regret ranking 2 pass catchers on a run-heavy offense, you know, as highly as I did with Harrison and McBride. And McBride's having, like, kind of a weird season too. So I don't know, man. I said I didn't want to talk about it. Now I'm talking about it. But, like, the Bears were just giving up all the ground in the world in the run game. And the Cardinals, who are a great run team, they took it. So, like, that's how they won the game.
And the Bears have good corners and a good passing defense. Game script just killed Arizona, or at least the fantasy managers, I should say, Sunday. Kyler Murray had a season-low 20 pass attempts. After the Jets this week, they get a bye and then a highly favorable-looking schedule down the stretch. But I actually I'm glad you didn't skip over this one, Harmon, because I wanted to talk Harrison Jr. and his route tree that looked so much better 2 weeks ago. I didn't even have to see the next gen come out. I'm like, dude, all these crossers, it's happening. And it was just happening clearly. And last week, you know, we only get 20 pass attempts. So I haven't seen any of the numbers. I don't know. But that is the important thing here. And I'm curious your take on it. How much they changed his role 2 weeks ago. And I hope that continues moving forward because, boy, agreed, that is going to be the difference in his fantasy production over the rest of the year.
100%. I just think like this game, you know, and again, there was probably a contested situation that he should have won Marvin Harrison. He's got to work on that. That is definitely the biggest flaw in his game right now. Like he has a weird plan attacking the football. That's got to improve. But you know, that was on like an outbreaking route that's a little bit more conducive to what I'd love to see Marvin Harrison doing. And yeah, those crossing routes over the middle of the field from 2 weeks ago, that's what we want to see. I'm not really concerned about either of these guys, honestly. And yeah, the fact that we saw that in, at least in his bag, hopefully we see more and more of that from Harrison. But I just am like kind of sick of the discussing the up and down prognosis with Harrison every week.
You know, the problem with Murray is either finishes the top five fantasy wide or quarterback or bottom five this year, too. That's the other thing with him. It's not exactly consistent.
Yeah, I'm almost tempted to throw them both in the coping corner just so we don't have to talk about it again, but we'll continue to talk about it. So I'm at no panic with either one of these guys. I don't know if you have like some, because at this point, like, yeah, stop thinking that Marvin Harrison Jr. is going to be a top 10 fantasy wide receiver this year. Sure. He's not going to be.
Fair. Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's some panic based on where you draft him. But yes, we should have been there a few weeks ago, maybe by now.
Next one, Fantas Chief on Dontayvion Wicks. I know it was slick in Green Bay today, but the dude dropped the same number of passes as me at a flag football tourney this weekend, at least two, and I paid the organizers to be there, not the other way around. Wide receiver 61 ADP for Wicks, wide receiver 69 ADP, current ranking for Dontayvion Wicks. I mean, you probably shouldn't be starting Dontayvion Wicks in fantasy, so like I don't know, but yeah, I would say at least from like his rest of career prognosis, I'm at least some panicked that he's going to drop his way out of opportunities here.
2 weeks ago, Wicks dropped way below Watson. Watts actually separated himself. I haven't seen the route participation numbers yet this week, but it seemed like Wicks gained some routes back. It was bad conditions, windy, rainy. Dobbs had a bad drop. Kraft had a bad drop. Emmanuel Wilson also had a touchdown drop, as did Wicks. But yeah, this is obviously a problem all year with him, and it's such a boring answer, but he's just way better in best ball, man. You just cannot rely on this guy in a season-long league. He'll have some spike weeks, but given their target distribution, it's going to be difficult to predict.
Yeah, like you just really should not be starting any Packers wide receivers consistently outside of like Jaden Reed. You know, because and Reed obviously is going to have to exceed over his expectation anyways. Like Tucker Kraft is the guy who runs the route on every single dropback. Everybody else rotates in and out. Reed and Dobbs are the number one and number two players. And then Christian Watson, 61.5% of the routes. Dontayvion Wicks just under 49%. And yeah, Wicks obviously had the two drops. And even Watson like misplayed some passes too. So like neither of those guys you should be starting in fantasy at all.
And I hear producer Colin saying 14-team leagues, injuries and whatnot. Sure, yeah, but you're happy to give a guy in a 14-team league like that because he could get a spike week from him, and he should have had a touchdown. His targets per route run are still high, and maybe some of these other receivers suffer injuries too. So, I mean, there's still he's worth like holding or something in a deeper league like that for sure.
Yeah, for sure. I'm just like, yeah, let's take advantage of your opportunities because he's clearly a good separator. Yeah, and I think it's like in his head at this point too, because he didn't really have these issues as a rookie, but he's had them a lot this year, and that is problematic. And he did have some of these issues in college too. So that is something to be concerned about for sure going forward. Next one comes in from Cozy Trav. Justin Jefferson, ever going to win us a week or are we getting 15 a game? I mean, I'm Cozy Trav. Oh no, you're getting 15 a game. Oh man, I feel so bad for you. I feel so bad for you that you have the current wide receiver, wide receiver two in points per game right now, 16.7. Oh no, this is terrible. Well, no, Cozy Trav, how could this happen to you? We need something lower than no panic to assign to Justin Jefferson here.
All right, I'll play devil's advocate a little here. There's been very low volume in Minnesota, despite ranking like fourth in pass rate over expectation. TJ Hockenson is back. And this is the main thing I wanted to ask you. Average depth of target last year, 12.6 yards, 28th in the league. This year, 8.7 yards, 76th in the league. I don't know. Is that something or is that nothing?
It's a hard one because, you know,
it's a different quarterback, you know, I mean,
Yeah. They don't have the Nick Mullins games in there juicing it up this year. I do think that's at least interesting to consider. And, you know, they've tried to now get like Jordan Addison to be the shot player at times. But I think that will come up to be like at around 10 by the end of the year is my guess.
I get you. I'm with you. I'm not panicking about Jefferson, who's, locked in top three every single week.
Yeah, I mean, I will say, obviously, has he had that win you a week yet? I don't know. I mean, he had 23 points in week two. He had 20 points. Yeah, what are we talking about here? I mean, we've had plenty of big games here. I guess this is, you know, I'm looking at, hang on, let me not look at PPR. Let me look at half PPR, the real game. Week two, he had 21.3 points, did Justin Jefferson. He's had multiple games with 17. Give me a break. What are we talking about here? You had 18 points against the damn Colts last night. You're going to be fine. You're coming out of week nine and you're disappointed out of Justin Jefferson, 7 targets, 137 yards. I don't know, man. Like, I don't know what to say about that. But yeah, he hasn't necessarily had to take over games because the Vikings have kind of won big, especially early in the season. But now they're looking like a team that might have to open it up a little bit more offensively. So we'll see if Sam Darnold can do that.
Jefferson, top five wide receiver all time already. What would you do if you put him in, like, you know, the Niners offense with Montana and Young? Where do you rank him? We're talking who? Rice, Moss, Calvin Johnson. I think he's in the conversation. Obviously, longevity, when you're going to do this, he falls behind. But we're talking of that good of a player.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of like guys that were in like my time covering the league, you know, like, I mean, he's easily up there with like Antonio Brown in terms of like who guys I like the best I've seen play the position.
Nope. And you would put Brown up there. Okay. Oh, no. Yeah. Interesting.
I mean, obviously didn't end in the best way, but guys that were like consistently dominant over the course of their entire career, definitely AB, obviously, I think was up there. But Jefferson is probably like coming for, at least in like the reception perception era, since I've been doing this in like 2014, he's probably the best I've seen, I would say.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. He's awesome.
All right, next one comes in here from Junebug. James Cook. Not that he's not doing well, just that Ray Davis is scary good. Is there enough rushing volume to go around, or should I be expecting Cook to just decline from here? James Cook, running back 13, current ranking running back 8. I mean, we're kind of pre-panicking on the James Cook thing. Do you have any concern about Cook as a fantasy player going forward?
Just looking at the goal line situation here, he got 2 carries inside the 6 earlier in the game Sunday, was stopped both times. Ray Davis saw Buffalo's final goal line carry in the fourth quarter, and he was stopped before Allen threw a 2-yard TD. James Cook saw 16 of 25 RB opportunities, but maybe Ray Davis simply becomes too good to keep off the field. I mean, it was a nice explosive play, so I get why there's some panic, but Cook remains their workhorse. And ideally, you have Ray Davis as insurance in case there's a Cook injury. But the key to him being a top 20 fantasy back or a top 5 is these goal line carries. And that's just what we need to pay attention to with Cook, because obviously he's in a great situation, aside from now Ray Davis looking so good behind him.
Yeah, I'm generally at like no panic with James Cook. I mean, he was one of the best players in fantasy in week 8. That was not that long ago. And yeah, James Cook, maybe you could have like a theoretical conversation about what does Ray Davis, like what would he do better than James Cook? But so far we haven't seen any inclination for them to involve Ray Davis enough to hurt James Cook's workload. So for now, I think I don't know. Do you have some panic, or are you in no panic?
No, it's fine.
Yeah, same. All right, no panic here. Last submission we'll talk through is from @Carl_Yorimoto. Very simple. The Bears. It's Jover. I don't even want to read through all of the damn like Bears and their fantasy rankings and stuff like that. Probably the biggest complaint people have is about DJ Moore, who wide receiver 18, current ranking is wide receiver 27. I am pretty tempted. I mean, Keenan Allen is already in the damn coping corner. I'm pretty close to putting everybody in this passing game in the coping corner along with them. What do you have to say about that, Dalton?
Now, let's talk a little Caleb Williams. He did have a strong performance in London, so I do want to note that. But, man, he's getting 5.7 YPA, 2 touchdowns over 4 official road games, 20 sacks over those 4 games. Rome Odunze, Keenan Allen, and DJ Moore ranked 6th, 8th, and 10th in inaccurate target rates for players with 25 targets outside the pocket this year. Outside the pocket. This was supposed to be Caleb's superpower in college. Catchable target rate tied for dead last with Tyler Huntley. Passing touchdown, zero. Passer rating tied for 36 with Tyler Huntley. His passing, Caleb Williams' passing lines when he's not facing a defense ranked bottom two in pass defense DVOA. He's averaged 189 passing yards, three touchdowns over six games. We're not facing a bottom two pass defense this year. He's averaging 189 passing yards, three touchdowns, four interceptions in six games. Caleb Williams under pressure, 43.1% completion rate, 30th. YPA 5.1, 27th. Yikes, man. And he hurt his ankle or hamstring in garbage time when out there this last week. He's a rookie, he's young, and he's playing well at home. He's shown some growth. But, yeah, these are some clear concerns for sure. I mean, absolutely. DeAndre Swift, on the other hand, I like him. But yeah. I want to hear your thoughts on Caleb.
Yeah, like it's not been great. The offensive line is a huge issue. And Shane Waldron seems to have no plan against any sort of like exotic pressure look. Even like the stuff that everybody's running now, Waldron has no plan for. Don't love the way the routes work together. I do think they in a weird way have too many guys that deserve the football on this team that I think that's causing issues here. I mean, like we just can't be throwing 10 passes to Keenan Allen. I said this on Twitter. I would trade Keenan Allen at the deadline, which is probably not going to happen, but just to like, all right, now let's get Caleb focused on building chemistry with DJ Moore and Roma Dunze, like the guys that are going to be a part of the team going forward. Keenan Allen's on the last year of his deal. He's not going to be there. But Rome specifically looks great. DJ Moore, there's been some weirdness with him, you know, like
left the field. Yeah, that was weird.
And that wasn't the first weird thing that's happened with DJ this year. So not sure what's going on there. I just feel like this team is, I don't want to overreact to two games here, but like you mentioned, it's not just two games, but these two out of the bye have been so disturbing. Like I said, I'm pretty tempting to agree that it is Jover and all these like pass catchers probably should be in the coping corner, because as long as it's this crowded and Caleb's not playing great and the offense is as poorly designed as it is, I don't really see how we can ever predict when any of these guys are going to break out.
Yeah, Keenan Allen ranked 66 out of 69 wide receivers in yards per target. I have hope for Rome, certainly long term, but I wouldn't even be surprised if he emerged as the number one here down the stretch. But that's obviously a problem for DJ Moore. Just quickly, no panic for me on DeAndre Swift. I have seen that he's been extra sensitive to game script, like he's averaging 40 more yards from scrimmage, scored three or four touchdowns in his four wins, but the opportunities have been identical. They've remained the same. He's been the RB8 since week three, despite Caleb Williams' struggles. And I like his setup at home against this week at home against New England. So no panic for me on DeAndre, but boy, the passing offense, full panic.
Yeah, total panic. I'll leave it at total panic on these guys right now, and obviously we can address coping corner if they if guys like DJ Moore especially don't have anything going here pretty soon. But I'm very like I'm about this close to coping corner with DJ Moore, and yeah, I'm with you. I want to hold out hope for Rome. The problem is just that he's like he's always gonna have to share footballs with all these other guys. And like I said, I think it's one thing to sit there and say like, okay, we can get the rookie targets, but then you're gonna DJ Moore is already not productive. Like Keenan Allen's already not productive. And these guys are proven veterans that have like been to Pro Bowls, you know? So they're going to be irritated if you're suddenly like scheming them out of the game. So I'm not really sure what the fix is here for Chicago other than probably get rid of the coaching staff and then start over next year.
Before we get to the pickups, non sequitur, I'm going to throw it at you, Harmon. Just because we talked last week how ridiculously hard it is to predict football, our guy JSN facing a team that allowed by far the fewest fantasy points to the slot this season. He's run 86% of his routes. Yes, no DK Metcalf, but the dude ranked, you know, almost dead last in yards per route run. What happened here? Is this who I thought I was drafting a year and a half ago? There's actually throwing him down the field, and he was making plays. He had two 40-yard plays called back by penalty, too.
Yeah.
Realize he finished by far the number one fantasy. Two 40-yard plays were taken away by penalty. I mean, what is going on here, Harmon? Is that a real breakout? Does Metcalf return and he goes back to getting the ball 3 yards from the line of scrimmage? I mean, what do we make of that? I mean, what a slate breaker. It's just funny that we said, we predicted, you know, Javonte Williams didn't run over Baltimore, but a guy who was facing the toughest slot defense all year produced the biggest performance of the week, of course.
Would not have pegged that the Rams were the best slot defense in the league, but I bet that's because they get torn up by perimeter wide receivers.
Right. So, probably as simple as that. Yeah. No, but their defense had been creating pressure.
Yes.
Their defense had been doing things. Like, it's one of those, don't look at the whole season. The Rams defense had been interesting. That Seattle offense looked functionable without DK. But suddenly he's throwing, you know, all three of Geno Smith's touchdown passes came in the final minute of the halves. All three.
That's crazy.
In the final minute of each half. That is a wild game. But sorry, tell me about JSN, no, man. I don't know what to believe.
And the best part is, like, I saw a bunch of goofballs joking on JSN, like when the touchdown bounced off it, or the interception bounced off his chest that got intercepted then by the Rams. And right after that, he just starts ripping it in that game. So he heard you, Fantasy Twitter. I don't know what to say about this game. And I've been asked about it so many times already. And it's only been, you know, less than 24 hours. Because Dalton, I don't know why they would not be throwing him those passes before. Like, his whole strength as a prospect was that he wasn't like a, you know, kind of pop gun slot receiver, that he won as a real deal route runner against man coverage on intermediate routes. And statistically, we just have never seen him used that way. But like, I watch him play and he has great success rate on in terms of reception perception on those out routes and dig routes and things like that. So I have no idea. I don't know why we never saw it. I don't know if we will ever see it again, but like, it was great to see it. I don't really know what else to say.
All right. Landed the same spot. Great to see. And we'll maybe never see it again, but boy, I hope.
But
so,
let's hope, but like, please, yeah, let's see it again. Like, there's no reason we shouldn't see it again, but there's no reason why we hadn't seen it before. So I don't know whether I can sit here and say like, yeah, no, it's going to happen now.
Yeah. Cause two different coaching staffs chose to use them that way. Not one, two different. And then, it's frustrating, but it's almost as if they sometimes coaches don't even know the players in front of them. It's just odd, man.
It is very odd. So we'll see what happens. Hopefully this is one of those can't put the genie back in the bottle, can't put the toothpaste back in the tube type things. And we continue to get those type of routes from JSN, because he can rip it on those. And he looked just awesome on Sunday. So I've always been a big fan of JSN. I've said he's been fine in the NFL. He'll look a lot better if he starts getting the ball thrown on those passes. That's for sure. All right. So we added Jalen Waddle and the Dallas Cowboys offense to the coping corner this week to go along with Keenan Allen, Calvin Ridley, Pat Mahomes, Sam Laporta, Javonte Williams, CJ Stroud, Anthony Richardson. Worth noting about Mahomes, if he's thrown 5 touchdowns by the time you've listened to this, this is filmed before Monday Night Football. So just note on that. All right, let's take a break and then get to the waiver wire options right after this. All right, we're back. Let's take a look at this week's waiver wire connections presented by Spectrum. Every week, Dalton and I share a large, medium, and small priority player on the waiver wire. And this week, I don't love the options this week, to be honest. Not a great waiver week. We've had a couple of bad waiver weeks, Dalton. So get excited about this segment that you're about to listen to and watch here. But let's start us off with the small priority players. Dalton, you hit me first.
I agree. I think this is the thinnest week since we've done that this season as far as pickups. Doesn't mean some can't pay off big, though. This is my small priority, Quentin Johnston. The Chargers have leaned into the pass over the last month, including Sunday when Herbert had 34 dropbacks versus 19 RB carries in a game LA was winning 20-3 at halftime. Johnson's route participation was up to 80%. He was targeted on 30% of his routes. He's seemingly benefited from blown coverages downfield. You'd know more than me, Harmon, but he's also improved as a route runner from as a rookie. He's still battling Josh Palmer and Ladd McConkey for targets. But young receivers, they frequently go off toward the end of season. So I say Johnston is worth stashing, and he's available in nearly 85% of Yahoo leagues.
Yeah, I like him as like a wide receiver 4-5 type candidate who's going to have big weeks for sure. He has improved from the worst receiver I charted last year to like a useful NFL player. Do I think he's about to be a superstar or something like that? No, but I think he's been useful. And also, as I always said about Quentin Johnston, they could not have used him in a more ill-fitting role, that coaching staff last year in LA. And this year they've gotten him a lot more runway routes, and he's benefited from blown coverages and things like that. But also some of that is because they're a run heavy team. Teams play him with a lot of cover one, and it's just a single high look. And if he runs past the guy, like he can rip big plays there. So I do like the idea of adding Quentin Johnston, but small priority is good. there. I'll also throw out a couple small priority players here. I'll give you two for one. Xavier Leggett, 27%, Jalen Coker, 13%. Both these are Panthers wide receivers. You know, Bryce Young played fine against the Saints. Good enough to win. We'll see. We don't know who the Panthers are going to start at quarterback this week. That's why I'm not going to go ham on either of these receivers. And I threw Coker in here just because I think he's a good player, but he only ran a route on 58.6% of the dropbacks. They played a lot more, you know, tight ends and things like that. So he's not a full-time player. He's not really a true fantasy asset yet, but I just threw him in here. Mainly Leggett is the one that if you got to start a Panthers wide receiver in fantasy, 27% rostered, ran a route on 93% of the dropbacks, target on 22% of those routes. Get the Giants this week, who've given up a lot of production to perimeter wide receivers. So Leggett definitely dropped his one opportunity, or like lost a contested catch opportunity there that probably should have been a big play for him. But otherwise, did score another touchdown. Think he's looked solid, like the way they've used him. While I do think Coker is a guy that could hang on this depth chart for a while, and is, it looks like a guy that they should prioritize more and more in the rotation. Xavier Leggett is probably the guy that if you want to start a Panthers receiver, he's the one here in week 10.
Bryce Young definitely showed improvement. His interception came on possibly the defensive play of the year. Crazy great play by the defender and a sure catch. Coker had a touchdown in the second quarter, but just out of bounds. And then Leggett scored on the very next play. But yeah, I think they can both, both those receivers can play, and they're going to get an opportunity with no Deontay Johnson, Adam Thielen. My medium pickup is Taysom Hill. He's top three fantasy tight end in week 8 while recording 4 catches for 41 yards. Of course, he also had 5 carries, including a goal line score, with Rashid Shaheed out for the season, and now Chris Olave dealing with yet another concussion. Hill's usage should be high moving forward. He gets there in an unorthodox way, but Hill can be started by those in need of tight end help, and he's available in more than 60% of Yahoo leagues.
Love it. Love when we've reached the Taysom Hill portion of the season. I'm not sure who's more excited about him, you or our buddy Andy Behrens, with the Taysom Hill scam at this point. But I hear you, and I'm down with it. I think you're going to like this next pick. Medium priority pickup, Ricky Pearsall, 28%. 72.7% of the routes in week 8 before the bye. You'd imagine they're going to want to get him a little more ramped up coming out of that bye week. They play the Bucks. The Bucks, man. I mean, give it up to everybody from a passing game perspective. Obviously, we're recording this before Monday night, so maybe they've shut down the Chiefs. I don't know about that. But that zone coverage defense, Ricky Pearsall looks like he's, you know, still getting it ramped up against man coverage, but he's looked really good against zone, knows where to settle. They've gotten him on some routes that I think fit his skill set. So overall, really like the usage for Pearsall, like the matchup here next week at 28% roster. He might be a guy that you can actually start if you play in multiple like flex leagues or something like that.
Yeah, and Purdy's been throwing to his wide receivers more than ever. Of course, CNC's return may change that. But the key there was Juwan Jennings just revealed his injury. It was something that you need a medical degree to figure out, but it didn't sound great. So if that's going to be lingering, that would definitely help Pearsall. My large priority is Ray Davis. Gotten 5.4 yards per carry the last 4 games, secured all 6 targets. As I said earlier, man, this rookie simply may force the Bills to play him more. But there's also league-winning upside should James Cook suffer an injury. Davis scored 18 fantasy points, saw 23 touches when Cook was inactive in week 6, and he's somehow still sitting on almost 80% of waiver wires in Yahoo leagues right now. Go stash him, man. I mean, this could be your league winner in the fantasy playoffs easily. It doesn't take a crazy scenario to see that happening.
100%. He should be much higher rostered. He should not be eligible for a segment like this, especially once you get past your bye weeks. And I know we're not all the way there yet, but once you start getting most of your bye weeks out of the way, these are the players you want on your bench. Not, you know, again, I just mentioned a lot of these like Xavier Leggett, Jalen Coker types, Quentin Johnson. These are the players you start dropping for the Ray Davis types once we get to that portion of the season when you don't need bye week fill-ins.
That was a 63-yard touchdown catch. Did you see that? He got he got Buffalo's final goal line carry too. So man, this kid can play.
Like we said with James Cook at the other segment of the show, like I don't know that they're ever just going to take work away from him, but Ray Davis is good. And like if he has to start games for them, he's somebody that's going to be a running back one in fantasy football. There's no question about that. A similar outlook for my large priority player, a guy that you probably can't start. He has 6 touches in 2 out of his last 3 games, but Tyler Allgeier, again, 39% rostered, is simply too low. look, this is not a great waiver week. I get it. Neither one of these guys is about to come in and, you know, start for your fantasy team this week, most likely. But Algier is a guy that if you do need a what the heck flex, you can chase a touchdown with Tyler Algier. He got the touchdown last week, even though Bijan Robinson was absolutely balling out. And look, if similar with Ray Davis, if anything ever happened to Bijan Robinson, Tyler Algier would, I think, maybe be a top eight fantasy back in any given week. He's that good. The offense is that good. They're never going to just be I thought at times maybe they'd become like David Montgomery, Jahmyr Gibbs, but they've really just been giving the ball to Bijan over and over again, and he's looked absolutely fantastic doing it. So that's probably not going to happen here for Tyler Algier, but still, being available in over 60% of Yahoo leagues is ridiculous. Like, he should be on rosters.
Yeah, these are the type of players you want stashed, one injury away from a top 10 RB, and even better than Davis. Algier does offer some flex equity in some weeks, especially when Atlanta's playing with the lead. And in games that are favored, Algier absolutely could be a possibility in flex as well. But upside to win your league if Robinson went down.
All right, this has been the Waiver Wire Connections on the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast, presented by Spectrum. And that is going to do it for the show today. Dalton, appreciate you, buddy. Hell of an episode.
Appreciate you as always, Armin.
We will be back tomorrow on Wednesday. Sal Vetri joins me for the post week 9 data dump and any reactions to anything that happens at all at the NFL trade deadline. We tell you all the stats that you need to know. We recap any of those moves at the NFL trade deadline. Until then, we are out.